Welcome to Happy Hour. Happy Monday, everybody. Sean Campbell, your local alternative Solid State Radio. Adam's got the day off today. I'm running here on about 3 or so hours of sleep. We almost didn't do a show today, but, I mean, it's the Lions. It's a overreaction Monday. We'd be really doing a disservice if we didn't come in here and rap about that a bit, because the Lions basically did exactly what you needed them to do after last week's whatever that was against the Seahawks. You really kind of needed them to go in and show that they could, well, learn from their mistakes for one, and you needed them to go out and show out yesterday to kind of keep people from just bailing off of the bandwagon after what was a rather disappointing loss to Seattle. And by and large, it would seem they accomplished that exact thing. The really amazing thing to me was I wasn't expecting that much of a turnaround from the defense. I really, truly wasn't. You knew that you needed to start being more aggressive on the pass rush after last week, and, well, it happened. You had sacks from Aiden Hutchinson, obviously, Ali McNeil, Benito Jones, Charles Harris. I may have made some of those players up, but all of them registered sacks in yesterday's game after getting shut out in the first two games of the season. The pass rush has gotten significantly better. Aiden Hutchinson had another two passes defended and a tackle for loss, two sacks on the day. And it really can't be overstated how good this Lions run defense is. You basically made Bijan Robinson, a guy who is expected to be in strong contention for Offensive Rookie of the Year, you made him look like he wasn't even there on Sunday. And all of this to say nothing about the dude who was probably the best player for either team on Sunday, that being one Brian Branch. He was making tackles for loss in the running game. He was making open field tackles, deflecting passes in coverage, 11 tackles, 3 for a loss, 2 passes defended. This kid's going to be something special, and honestly, I think he may be getting a bit, he may have been a bit overlooked upon being drafted. You're like, this may be a dude who's in contention for Defensive Rookie of the Year. But it seemed like, by and large, other than Jerry Jacobs, really, everyone on defense stepped up the way you needed him to do. And Aaron Glenn, give him credit. I mean, if we're gonna just slam the guy when defense doesn't show up to play, got to give him credit when they very, very much do. On the offensive side of things, I mean, Sam LaPorta is, my God, this man he's the real deal. Already early on here, like when the offense would just seemingly just get stuck, he would single-handedly bring them back on, you know, get the train back on the rails. 8 catches, 84 yards on the day. And anytime it seemed like Amon Ra just couldn't be gotten to, and nor could Khalif Raymond, LaPorta's just there. I think the biggest concern, I mean, obviously has to be the O-line, right? I mean, it seemed like everybody was in trouble at some point during the afternoon, and you had a few penalties from guys who should know better. It's not like it's the rental players that are coming and subbing in for Decker and Vitae that are getting all the penalty calls and giving up all the QB hits. I mean, Matt Nelson, Dan Skipper, Colby Sorsdahl didn't perform exactly great, but it's the fact that you're seeing the holding calls for Penei Sewell, 2 of them at that, 1 from Frank Ragnow. These are the guys that should be lockdown guys, and they're making these kind of mistakes, or maybe they're being forced to because they're just not getting, they're just not able to do the blocking they need to with the pieces around them. But it seemed like everybody was just making dumb mistakes right off the, like, bad plays all day. Once again, Taylor Decker has never been so desperately missed as he is in this moment right now. Hopefully you'll have him back for Thursday. Not entirely sure at this point whether that's going to be the case, but God, it would be nice. Like, you could get away with some of the other guys who are currently out. Like, okay, if you go ahead and rest Montgomery through this game in the next 10 days, great. Okay. I don't think you can afford to have Decker out a second more than is absolutely positively necessary. I do feel like, though, this is the kind of game that is ultimately going to get everyone back on board the bandwagon, and if they're able to go into Lambeau on a short turnaround on Thursday night and go in there and win, I feel like, for better or worse, the hype train is going to be going at full steam again. At that point, you'll have come out of your first four games 3-1. Not quite how you thought you'd get the 3-1 at the start of this season, but certainly nothing to sneeze at nonetheless, you know, knocking off the defending Super Bowl champs in week one. And I feel like for a lot of people, no one was expecting you to be undefeated through four games. Absolutely nobody. I know I wasn't. Except I figured your loss would be that first game of the season. But you come out of this stretch 3-1 the way you do it, I feel like the hype train in this town is just going to be going back at full blast all over again. And you know what? At that point, I'm okay with it, and I feel like it's entirely well-deserved. What do you think? Facebook.com/HappyHourSSR. Plenty of other stuff to do here on an Overreaction Monday. Stick around. It is Happy Hour at Solid State Radio. D's the new at your local alternative Solid State Radio. And can we just talk for a moment? Because I should have probably mentioned this in the last segment. Can we talk about Dan Campbell for a moment and how it finally seems like maybe we're getting a, I'm not going to say less aggressive, but at least a better thought out play call from Dan Campbell now. Also, for one, let's get out of the way with Aaron Glenn. He was doing a lot of different things than he normally does, than he has in recent weeks, certainly than he did against Seattle. And a lot of it worked pretty well. Like, you had the linebackers more involved in the pass rush, which clearly needed to happen. Like, something needed to be adjusted there desperately, because you couldn't put pressure on a quarterback last week if your life depended on it. And credit to Aaron Glenn for adjusting the scheme and bringing some more guys in and establishing the pass rush, which has been, to this point, fairly abysmal as far as Campbell goes. Like, you didn't have the stupid fourth down go for it calls that have kind of become really the hallmark of his tenure here in Detroit. Like, I don't think any of the fourth quarter calls were particularly egregious. I mean, he didn't go for it on most of them. The notable one was the field goal in the second quarter, the 24-yarder for Riley Patterson, instead of going for it on fourth and goal, the Atlanta 6. I mean, at that point, you're only up by 7. You absolutely, I feel like, you take the points there. And that was a smart call on Campbell's part. Like, I love the aggressiveness of going for it on fourth down, but there's being aggressive and sometimes there's being reckless, and it seems like he's starting to kind of find that middle ground between aggressive and reckless, and it needed to happen before it really started costing you some games where it counted. We'll get to the rest of the weekend in football coming up right now. Here's Royal Blood at Solid State Radio. Rise Against, your local alternative Solid State Radio, and we're just going to get all the college stuff done in one fell swoop here, because on one side, there's really nothing to talk about. On the other, what we do have to talk about is just not good, and honestly, quite frankly, confirms everything I've been thinking for the last couple weeks anyway. Michigan, okay, you went in and beat Rutgers 31-7, and I am completely and utterly confused by this weird narrative that Michigan's trying to push here. So Blake Corum gets interviewed after the game. He had 97 rushing yards, 2 touchdowns on the day. And he comes in saying, quote, "They come in thinking they're the bullies and we bully bullies. We take pride in that." Saying this about Rutgers. Huh? A team that's barely top 100 in the country? They're the bullies, apparently. Pretty sure Rutgers couldn't be considered a bully by literally anybody since about 1895. If we're really going to go with this whole bully narrative here, Wolverine fans, how about picking on a team their own size? Like, I don't know, the team now sitting at number 4 in the AP poll after going and scheduling and beating a real non-conference opponent. Admittedly, it was kind of an ugly win for Ohio State, But at least you beat actual somebody and not the Little Sisters of the Poor for the first 4 weeks of the year. Yeah, now they look great against Indiana or Youngstown State, and there's certainly plenty of questions still around the Buckeye squad, too. But you know what? They've at least beaten a real opponent this season and have at least made a somewhat convincing case that they should be in the top four teams in the country. I haven't seen it from Michigan yet. Texas has certainly made a case for it. Hell, I'd argue Florida State's made more of a case to be a top four team in the nation than Michigan has. At least they've played actual teams. They beat LSU. They beat Clemson for, you know, yeah, I know Clemson's on the decline, but what the hell ever. You're going to throw Rutgers up there as proof that Michigan is one of the best teams in the nation? That's really what you're going to throw at me? You're going to throw in not even being able to cover against UNLV, Bowling Green? Really? That's what we're going to throw out here? Really? Play a real opponent, then we'll talk. And we're not even going to see that for a couple more weeks. You got Nebraska next week. Yeah, Minnesota, Indiana. Like, you don't face a real challenge. I mean, the first thing you could even a little bit convince yourself is something resembling a challenge, in theory, would be the Michigan State game. But let's be honest, you're gonna stomp all over Sparty in that one. Your first challenge doesn't really come until November 11th when you go play Penn State. And what's left to say about Michigan State? I mean, Maryland, not a good team. Tagovailoa is not a bad QB by any means. But Maryland's, okay, yeah, they're 4-0. 4-0 beating, no team that I've ever heard of, and then just embarrassing the hell out of you. It's a wash of a season, and I think everybody really kind of knows that at this point. All I'm saying is I hope it gets this whole coaching staff fired out of a cannon into the sun, and sooner rather than later. Here's Sum 41 at Solid State Radio. White Stripes, your local alternative Solid State Radio. It is happy hour, and we'll get to a bigger overreaction segment tomorrow. We've got Adam back in studio and all that fun stuff. But there are a couple games I feel like we do have to kind of touch on and do a quick little blitz here, shall we? Maestro, the music, please. Can we just talk about how just laughably hopeless the Denver Broncos looked yesterday? Sean Payton really thought he was going to walk back in here with all that swagger of his and just absolutely show the entire football world how it's done. He basically went on a whole tour this offseason, throwing everybody from the previous coaching staff under the bus in the most embarrassing way possible. And don't let me be misconstrued on this. Not that Nathaniel Hackett and company didn't deserve every bit of the shade that Sean Payton threw at them. But if you're going to go and do that, you gotta be able to back it up. You absolutely cannot go and completely lay an egg once you start playing games. And oh boy, did they lay one for the ages on Sunday. 70-20. That doesn't happen in the NFL. I don't believe it's happened since, 1966, give or take? A 50-point margin of victory. Quite frankly, I'm impressed that they managed to score 20 points on this team the way they were playing. Quite frankly, I'm amazed that they managed to get possession of the ball long enough to score 20 points. That was absolutely sad. And I think Zach Wilson is about to, or Zach Wilson, how you doing? Sean Payton is about to play himself out of a job here. Honestly, the press conference should have basically consisted of Vance Joseph is fired, effective immediately, at the very least, because there is no reason that man should still have a job after allowing 70 points to be given. I don't care how banged up you're. I don't care what excuses you want to throw at me. You absolutely, positively cannot do that. You can't. You just can't. Sorry. And on Peyton, like, you've got to be absolutely embarrassed. And you can tell he was, because reporters kept bringing up just how historically bad this was, and he was just snapping at people.
Yeah, I know. Next question, okay? Yeah, what's the question?
But he brought every single bit of this upon himself. You went in there and you trashed so many people. Like, you blamed the whole coaching staff for the fact that Russell Wilson was trash. And, you know, it's their fault for not letting Russ cook, when, as it turns out, Russ was, in fact, cooked. It was everything was their fault. And so now, 0-3. The most embarrassing loss that Denver has possibly suffered ever. And he doesn't have Nathaniel Hackett and company to blame for this one. This is all on Sean Payton at this point, and this might just be a one-and-done thing for him. Like, I don't know how you recover from this. I mean, at least the Broncos last year, yeah, they were terrible. But they were at least keeping games to within a single score. You're losing to, like, just mediocre teams by a single score this season. And then when you play a real team, you're just getting blown out. Just absurdly so. And this scheme isn't working any better than the one prior to it. Like, this has to end, doesn't it? Like, the plug has to be pulled at some point this season. I don't see how there's a way around it now. So that was fantastic. Meanwhile, on the other side of it, Mike McDaniel does really look like the offensive just genius that he was kind of touted as when he was hired in. I mean, the Dolphins are now first in passing and rushing in the NFL this season. I mean, granted, yesterday kind of skews the tips the scales a little bit, but still, you're averaging right now 552 yards of total offense per game. No one else is anywhere near that. Like, the average in the league is 218 yards less than that. There are teams going out there who aren't putting up 218 yards offense in a week. And they're that far ahead of the second place team here. And just everything about the offense really just firing on all cylinders. Like, Jalen Waddle's been absolutely fantastic. Like, Mike McDaniel's figured out a way to really play the strengths and weaknesses of his quarterbacks and his receivers and use them very much to this team's advantage. We've talked about it a lot, where this team is a absolute monster in yards after the catch. So Tua doesn't have to do a whole lot, but as he showed yesterday, he still can. But when you have guys like Jalen Waddle is far and away the best in yards after the catch in the NFL. 11.2 yards after catch per reception. A full 3 yards better than the next place guy, which would be Mike Evans in Tampa Bay. Like, Mike McDaniel just knows how to put guys in positions where they can thrive. And it's very much paying dividends for them now. The Cowboys. Let's talk about that for a moment, shall we? Because I was kind of happy. It was not a great day if you're a bandwagon sports fan. Like, the Yankees got eliminated from the playoffs. The Cowboys went and lost to a Cardinals team that is barely functionally qualified as an NFL team. Lakers fans must be so disappointed right now. And I'm still not entirely sure how this happened. Like, Cards came in 0-2 in this thing, and we're looking like, all right, how soon can we get rid of Kyler Murray and draft Caleb Williams and just roll on to it? But instead, the Cowboys' defense completely flatlined. And give credit to Arizona for really creating a lot of room for all their running backs to do what they needed to do, really opening up things quite a bit. But even so, honestly, the defensive lapses on the part of Dallas were so utterly it was amazing to me for a team that shut everybody else out so early on. It's stunning. It really is. Five players got yards on the ground for Arizona. The Cowboys gave up 7.4 yards a carry. Like, you just collapse in the middle and never really manage to recover from that. I love it. I absolutely love it. Let's make fun of a team a little closer to home real quick, shall we? The Chicago Bears. And it almost seems inevitable that Justin Fields is gone as soon as his contract's up. Does it not? And in fact, it also seems inevitable that Matt Eberflus is out with him. Like, you can make arguments either way on this one. But none of it looks good. Like, yeah, Justin Fields basically going out and throwing the coaching staff completely under the bus. He's going to get another shot somewhere. It's going to happen. But I'm just not convinced that, oh, none of this is his fault. He's getting railroaded by his coaching staff. I mean, it's all bad. He's not playing well. He's also losing his confidence. The coaching staff has less faith in him as time goes on, leading Fields to kind of lash out, and that's why he's calling the offense robotic and all this other stuff. With all that, and then you just had your defensive coordinator just under mysterious circumstances resign earlier in the week. And immediately after that, you have to go and face KC. This team cannot catch a break. This quarterback can't catch a break. And honestly, there's going to be a parting of the ways there, I think, sooner rather than later. But really the most bizarre thing I saw on Sunday, the Raiders, the Steelers. The Raiders, early in that game, were just not in it at all on Sunday night. And then, as the game went on, they started to make a comeback. And for a while, it seemed like there was really a very good chance that, oh my God, maybe they actually pulled this thing off. When you're looking earlier at that game and see Pittsburgh up at one point 23-7, you know, fairly late in the game, in the fourth quarter, as a matter of fact, and then all of a sudden, touchdown, successful two-point conversion, and then you manage to force a punt from the Steelers, three and out, you get the ball back. Starting at your own 48-yard line. And you get it all the way down to the Pittsburgh 14-yard line. Second and four. Third and four at the Pittsburgh 8-yard line. It seems like you have no choice here, right? You're down at this point 23-15. You need a touchdown and a two-point conversion, basically, to tie this thing. Or you take your 7 points and then hope you get the ball back in time to get a field goal off. Whichever. But on fourth and four at the Pittsburgh 8-yard line, Josh McDaniels chose to do neither of these things. What did he do? He chose to kick a field goal. Down eight. With a shade over 2 minutes left in the game. All your timeouts and the two-minute warning. Needing to force a three and out at some point. Maybe I think he had a little too much faith in that, honestly. Because he chose on fourth and four, instead of the obvious call to go for it, get those 4 yards at least and get yourself a fresh set of downs. Instead, they go and kick the field goal. And after that, well, they needed to stop desperately the Steelers at that point. Like, this can work, I guess, but just such a cowardly call. I can't believe it because it's Josh McDaniels, but I was stunned when it happened. So they get down to third and two in the ensuing Steelers possession. And Kenny Pickett pulls off a pass for 6 yards, fresh set of downs. They need to get a stop here, and they just cannot do it. They give a first down. And then, all right, finally, you manage to force 4th and 13 at their own 36. You force a punt. Your receiver muffs the catch. Barely holds on to the ball. Bounces high off his face, actually, and almost gets recovered by Pittsburgh right then and there. First play, you basically know you've got a Hail Mary shot at it, maybe two if you're lucky. You've burned all your timeouts. Deep left for Devontae Adams. Picked off. End of the game. Can't even argue that you deserve to win that game at that point. You still need a touchdown after that. Like, you still need to go all the way back down the field at that point. If you didn't get that, you would lost, and you didn't leave yourself nearly enough time to get back down the field. And so instead, you have that. And that might be the most embarrassing thing, quite frankly, I saw. The single most embarrassing play call I saw all week, at least. I mean, the most embarrassing thing has to go to Denver, right? It is happy hour. Stick around. Hour at Solid State Radio. We can set to get the hell out of Dodge here on a Monday afternoon. Adam will be back tomorrow. We'll be back after it with more, I'm sure, football talk and overreactions and things of that nature, especially after these two games tonight. In the meantime, stick around as a full hour of local original music comes your way next on a little show we like to call Solid State Sessions. In the meantime, I'm out of here. All being well. Talk to you tomorrow afternoon at 3. See ya.